Wrong, he tried to say, but he couldn't. He couldn't speak.
No!
Raoden yelled, sitting upright with a sudden motion. He blinked a few times, disoriented in the darkness. Finally, he took a few deep breaths, putting his hand to his head. The pain did remain. It was growing so strong that it even corrupted his dreams. He had dozens of tiny wounds and bruises now, even though he had been in Elantris for only 3 weeks. He could feel each one distinctly, and together they formed a unified frontal assault on sanity. Raoden groaned, leaning forward and grabbing his legs as he fought the pain. His body could no longer sweat, but he could feel it trembling. He clamped his teeth shut, gritting them against the surge of agony. Slowly, laboriously, he reasserted control. He rebuffed the pain, soothing his tortured body, until finally he released his legs and stood. It was growing worse. He knew it shouldn't be so bad yet. He hadn't even been in Elantris for a month. He also knew that the pain was supposed to be steady, or so everyone said. But for him it seemed to come in waves. It was always there, always ready to pounce on him in a moment of weakness. Sighing, Raoden pushed open the door to his chambers. He still found it odd that Elantrians should sleep. Their hearts no longer beat. They no longer needed breath. Why did they need sleep? The others, however, could give him no answers. The only true experts had died 10 years previously. So Raoden slept. And with that sleep came dreams. He had been 8 when he broke his leg. His father had been loath to bring him into the city. Even before the Riod, Iodin had been suspicious of Elantris. Raoden's mother, dead some 12 years now, had insisted. The child Raoden hadn't understood how close he'd come to death. He had felt the pain, however, and the beautiful peace of its removal. He remembered the beauty of both the city and its occupants. Iodin had spoken harshly of Elantris as they left, and Raoden had contradicted the words with vehemence. It was the first time Raoden could remember taking a position against his father. After that, there had been many others. As Raoden entered the main chapel, Saolin left his attendant position beside Raoden's chamber, falling into place beside him. Over the last week, the soldier had gathered a group of willing men and formed them into a squad of guards. "You know, I am flattered by your attentiveness, Saolin," Raoden said, "but is it really necessary?"
"A lord requires an honor guard, Lord Spirit," Saolin explained. "It wouldn't be proper for you to go about alone."
"I'm not a lord, Saolin," Raoden said. "I'm just a leader. There is to be no nobility in Elantris."
"I understand, my lord," Saolin said with a nod,
obviously not seeing the paradox within his own words.
"However, the city is still a dangerous place."
"As you wish, Saolin," Raoden said. "How goes the planting?"
"Galadon has finished his plowing," Saolin said. "He has already organized the planting teams."
"I shouldn't have slept so long," Raoden said, looking out the chapel window to notice how high the sun had risen. He left the building, Saolin close behind, and walked around a neat cobblestone path to the gardens. Kahar and his crew had cleaned off the stones, and then Dehaid, one of Tayane's followers, had used his skills with stoneworking to reset them. The planting was already well underway. Galadin oversaw the work with a careful eye, his gruff tongue quick to point out any errors. However, there was a peace about the doula. Some men were farmers because they had no other choice.
but Galadin seemed to find true enjoyment in the activity. Raoden remembered clearly that first day when he had tempted Galadin with a bit of dried meat. His friend's pain had barely been under control back then. Raoden had been scared of the duelist several times during those first days. Now, none of that remained. Raoden could see it in Galadin's eyes and in his bearing. He had found the secret, as Kahar had put it. Galadin was in control again. Now the only one Raoden had to fear was himself. His theories were working better than even he had expected, but only on everyone else. He had brought peace and purpose to the dozens who followed him, but he couldn't do the same for himself. The pain still burned him. It threatened him every morning when he awoke, and stayed with him every moment he was conscious. He was more purposeful than any of the others, and was the most determined to see Elantra succeed. He filled his days, leaving no empty moments to contemplate his suffering. Nothing worked. The pain continued to build.
"My lord, watch out!" Saelin yelled.
Raoden jumped, turning as a growling, bare-chested Elantrian charged from a darkened hallway, running toward Raoden. Raoden barely had time to step backward, as the wild man lifted a rusted iron bar and swung it directly at Raoden's face. Bare steel flashed out of nowhere, and Saolin's blade parried the blow. The bestial newcomer halted, reorienting himself to a new foe. He moved too slowly. Saolin's practiced hand delivered a thrust directly through the madman's abdomen. Then, knowing that such a blow wouldn't stop an Elantrian, Saolin swung a mighty backhand, separating the madman's head from his body. There was no blood. The corpse tumbled to the ground, and Saolin saluted Raoden with his blade, shooting him a gap-toothed smile of reassurance. Then he spun around to face a group of wild men charging down a nearby street toward them. Stunned, Raoden stumbled backward.
"Saolin, no! There are too many of them!"
Fortunately, Saolin's men had heard the commotion. Within seconds, there were five of them. Saolin, Daishi, and three other soldiers standing against the attack. They fought in an efficient line, blocking their enemy's path to the rest of the gardens, working with the coordination of trained soldiers. Sheor's men were more numerous, but their rage was no match for martial efficiency. They attacked solitarily, and their fervor made them stupid. In moments, the battle was over, the few remaining attackers dashing away in retreat. Saolin cleaned his blade efficiently, then turned with the others. They saluted Raoden in coordination. The entire battle had happened almost more quickly than Raoden could follow. "Good work," he finally managed to say. A grunt came from his side, where Galadin knelt beside the decapitated body of the first attacker. "They must have heard we had corn in here," the doula mumbled. "Poor Rulos." Raoden nodded solemnly, regarding the fallen madmen. Four of them lay on the ground, clutching various wounds, all of which would have been fatal had they not been Elantrians. As it was, they could only moan in torment. Raoden felt a stab of familiarity. He knew what that pain felt like. "This cannot continue," he said quietly.
"I don't see how you can stop it, Sule," Galadin replied at his side. "These are Sheor's men. Not even he has much control over them."
Raoden shook his head.
"I will not save the people of Elantris and leave them to fight all the days of their lives. I will not build a society on death.
Sheor's followers might have forgotten that they are men, but I have not.
Galadin frowned. Caerita and Aendon, they were possibilities, if distant ones.
Sheor is another story, Sule. There isn't a smear of humanity left in these men. You can't reason with them.
Then I'll have to give them their reason back, Raoden said.
And how, Sule, do you intend to do that?
I will find a way.
Raoden knelt by the fallen madman. A tickle in the back of his mind warned him that he recognized this man from recent experience. Raoden couldn't be certain, but he thought that the man had been one of Teyane's followers, one of the men Raoden had confronted during Daeshi's attempted raid.
So it's true, Raoden thought, with a crimp in his stomach.
Many of Teyane's followers had come to join Raoden, but the larger part had not. It was whispered that many of these had found their way to the merchant sector of Elantris, joining with Sheor's wild men.
It wasn't all that unlikely, Raoden supposed. The men had been willing to follow the obviously unbalanced Aendon, after all. Sheor's band was only a short step away from that.
Lord Spirit? Saolin asked hesitantly. What should we do with him?
Raoden turned pitying eyes on the fallen.
They are of no danger to us now, Saolin. Let's put them with the others.
Soon after his success with Aendon's gang, and the subsequent swell in his band's numbers, Raoden had done something he'd wanted to from the beginning. He started gathering the fallen of Elantris. He took them off the streets and out of the gutters, searched through buildings both destroyed and standing, trying to find every man, woman, and child in Elantris who had given in to their pain. The city was large, and Raoden's manpower was limited. But so far they had collected hundreds of people. He ordered them placed in the second building Kahar had cleaned, a large open structure he had originally intended to use as a meeting place. The Hoed would still suffer, but at least they could do it with a little decency. And they wouldn't have to do it alone. Raoden had asked the people in his band to visit the Hoed. There were usually a couple of Elantrians walking among them, talking soothingly, and trying to make them as comfortable as possible, considering the circumstances. It wasn't much, and no one could stomach much time among the Hoed, but Raoden had convinced himself that it helped. He followed his own counsel, visiting the Hall of the Fallen, at least once a day, and it seemed to him that they were improving. The Hoed still groaned, mumbled, or stared blankly, but the more vocal ones seemed quieter. Where the hall had once been a place of fearful screams and echoes, it was now a subdued realm of quiet mumblings and despair. Raoden moved among them gravely, helping carry one of the fallen wild men. There were only four to deposit. He had ordered the fifth man, the one Saolin had beheaded, buried. As far as anyone could tell, an Elantrian died when he was completely beheaded. At least their eyes didn't move, nor did their lips try to speak, if the head was completely separated from the body. As he walked through the Hoed, Raoden listened to their quiet murmurings.
Beautiful. Once so very beautiful. Life, 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 life.
Oh, Domai, where are you? When will it end? Oh, Domai.
He usually had to block the words out after a time, lest they'd drive him insane. Or worse, reawaken the pain within his own body. Ayin was there, floating around sightless heads and weaving between fallen bodies. The Sion spent a lot of time in the room. It was strangely fitting.
They left the hall a solemn group, quiet and content to keep to their own thoughts.
Raedon only spoke when he noticed the tear in Saolin's robes.
"You're wounded," Raedon said with surprise.
"It is nothing, my lord," Saolin said indifferently.
"That kind of modesty is fine on the outside, Saolin, but not here. You must accept my apology."
"My lord," Saolin said seriously, "being an Elantrian only makes me more proud to wear this wound. I received it protecting our people."
Raedon turned a tormented look back at the hall.
"It only brings you one step closer."
"No, my lord. I don't think it does. Those people gave in to their pain because they couldn't find purpose. Their torture was meaningless. And when you can't find reason in life, you tend to give up on it. This wound will hurt, but each stab of pain will remind me that I earned it with honor. That is not such a bad thing, I think."
Raedon regarded the old soldier with a look of respect. On the outside, he probably would have been close to retirement. In Elantris, with the Sheod as an equalizer, he looked about the same as anyone else. One couldn't tell age by looks, but perhaps one could tell it through wisdom.
"You speak discerningly, my friend," Raedon said. "I accept your sacrifice with humility."
The conversation was interrupted by the slap of feet against cobblestones. A moment later, Caerita dashed into view, her feet coated with fresh sludge from outside the chapel area. Kahar would be furious. She had forgotten to wipe down her feet, and now she was tracking slime over his clean cobblestones. Caerita obviously didn't care about slime at the moment. She surveyed the group quickly, making sure no one was missing.
"I heard Sheor attacked. Were there any casualties?"
5. "All on their side," Raedon said.
"I should have been here," she said with a curse.
During the last few days, the determined woman had been overseeing the relocation of her people to the chapel area. She agreed that a central, unified group would be more effective, and the chapel area was cleaner. Oddly enough, the idea of cleaning the palace had never occurred to her. To most Elantrians, the sludge was accepted as an irrevocable part of life.
"You have important things to do," Raedon said. "You couldn't have anticipated Sheor would attack."
Caerita didn't like the answer, but she fell into line beside him without further complaint.
"Look at him, Sule," Galadin said, smiling slightly beside him.
"I would never have thought it possible."
Raedon looked up, following the doula's gaze. Tayane knelt beside the road, inspecting the carvings on a short wall with childlike wonder. The squat-bodied former baron had spent the entire week cataloging each carving, sculpture, or relief in the chapel area. He had already discovered, in his words, at least a dozen new techniques. The changes in Tayane were remarkable, as was his sudden lack of interest in leadership. Caerita still maintained a measure of influence in the group, accepting Raedon as the ultimate voice, but retaining most of her authority. Tayane, however, didn't bother to give orders. He was too busy with his studies. His people, the ones who had decided to join with Raedon, didn't seem to mind. Tayane now estimated that about 30% of his court had found its way to Raedon's band, trickling in as small groups. Raedon hoped that most of the others had chosen solitude instead. He found the idea of 70% of Tayane's large band joining with Sheor very disturbing. Raedon had all of Caerita's people, but her gang had always been the smallest, if most efficient, of the three. Sheor's had always been the largest. Its members had just lacked the cohesion and the motivation to attack the other gangs. The occasional newcomers Sheor's men had been given had sated their bloodlust. No longer. Raoden would accept no quarter with the madmen, would not allow them to torment innocent newcomers. Kerita and Seolin now retrieved everyone thrown into the city, bringing them safely to Raoden's band. So far, the reaction from Sheor's men had not been good, and Raoden feared that it would only grow worse.
"I'll have to do something about them," he thought.
That, however, was a problem for another day. He had studies he needed to get to for the moment. Once they reached the chapel, Galadin went back to his planting. Saolin's men dispersed to their patrols, and Kerita decided, despite her earlier protests, that she should return to the palace. Soon only Raoden and Saolin were left. After the battle and sleeping so late, over half the day's light had already been wasted, and Raoden attacked his studies with determination. While Galadin planted and Kerita evacuated the palace, it was Raoden's self-appointed duty to decipher as much as he could about Aeon Dor. He was becoming increasingly convinced that the ancient magic of the characters held the secret of Elantris's fall. He reached through one of the chapel windows and pulled out the thick Aeon Dor tome sitting on the table inside. So far, it hadn't been as helpful as he had hoped. It was not an instruction manual, but a series of case studies explaining odd or interesting events surrounding Aeon Dor. Unfortunately, it was extremely advanced. Most of the book gave examples of what wasn't supposed to happen, and so Raoden needed to use reverse reasoning to decipher the logic of Aeon Dor. So far, he had been able to determine very little. It was becoming obvious that the Aeons were only starting points, the most basic figures one could draw to produce an effect. Just like the expanded healing Aeon from his dream, advanced Aeon Dor consisted of drawing a base Aeon in the center, then proceeding to draw other figures, sometimes just dots and lines, around it. The dots and lines were stipulations narrowing or broadening the power's focus. With careful drawing, for instance, a healer could specify which limb was to be healed, what exactly was to be done to it, and how an infection was to be cleansed. The more Raoden read, the less he was beginning to see Aeons as mystical symbols. They seemed more like mathematical computations. While most any Elantrian could draw the Aeons, all it required was a steady hand and a basic knowledge of how to write the characters. The masters of Aeon Dor were the ones who could swiftly and accurately delineate dozens of smaller modifications around the central Aeon. Unfortunately, the book assumed that its reader had a comprehensive knowledge of Aeon Dor and passed over most of the basic principles. The few illustrations included were so incredibly complex that Raoden usually couldn't even tell which character was the base Aeon without referring to the text. "If only he would explain what it means to channel the door," Raoden exclaimed, rereading a particularly annoying passage that kept using the phrase. "Dor, Sule?" Galadin asked, turning away from his planting. "That sounds like a Duladan term." Raoden sat upright. The character used in the book to represent Dor was an uncommon one, not really an Aeon at all, but simply a phonetic representation, as if the word had been transliterated from a different language.
"Galadin, you're right," Raoden said. "It isn't Aeonic at all."
"Of course not. It can't be an Aeon. It only has one vowel in it,"
That's a simplistic way of putting it, my friend. But it's true. Kolo?
Yes, I suppose it is, Rayodin said. That doesn't matter right now. What matters is door. Do you know what it means?
Well, if it's the same word, then it refers to something in Jesker.
What do the mysteries have to do with this? Rayodin asked suspiciously.
Dolokin Sule, Galadin swore. I've told you, Jesker and the mysteries are not the same thing. What Opilon calls the Jeskeri mysteries is no more related to Duladel's religion than it is to Shukeseg.
Point taken, Rayodin said, raising his hands. Now, tell me about Dor.
It's hard to explain, Sule, Galadin said, leaning on a makeshift hoe he had crafted out of a pole and some rocks.
Dor is the unseen power. It is in everything, but cannot be touched. It affects nothing, yet it controls everything. Why do rivers flow?
Because the water is pulled downwards, just like everything else. The ice melts in the mountains, and it has to have a place to go.
Correct, Galadin said. Now a different question. What makes the water want to flow?
I wasn't aware that it needed to.
It does. And the door is its motivation, Galadin said. Jesker teaches that only humans have the ability, or the curse, of being oblivious to the door. Did you know that if you take a bird away from its parents and raise it in your house, it will still learn to fly?
Rayodin shrugged. How did it learn, Sule? Who taught it to fly?
The door? Rayodin asked hesitantly.
That is correct.
Rayodin smiled. The explanation sounded too religiously mysterious to be useful. But then he thought of his dream, his memories of what had happened so long ago. When the Elantrian healer had drawn her Aeon, it appeared as if a tear were appearing in the air behind her finger. Rayodin could still feel the chaotic power raging behind that tear, the massive force trying to press its way through the Aeon to get at him. It sought to overwhelm him, to break him down until he became part of it. However, the healer's carefully constructed Aeon had funneled the power into a usable form, and it had healed Rayodin's leg instead of destroying him. That force, whatever it had been, was real. It was there, behind the Aeons he drew, weak though they were.
That must be it.
Galadin, that's why we are still alive.
What are you babbling about, Sule? Galadin said, looking up from his work with tolerance.
That is why we live on, even though our bodies don't work anymore, Rayodin said with excitement. Don't you see? We don't eat, yet we get the energy to keep moving. There must be some link between Elantrians and the door. It feeds our bodies, providing the energy we need to survive.
Then why doesn't it give us enough to keep our hearts moving and our skin from turning gray?
Galadin asked, unconvinced.
Because it's barely enough, Rayodin explained. Aeon Dor no longer works. The power that once fueled the city has been reduced to a bare trickle. The important thing is, it's not gone. We can still draw Aeons, even if they are weak and don't do anything. And our minds continue to live, even if our bodies have given up. We just need to find a way to restore it to full power.
Oh, is that all? Galadin asked. You mean we need to fix what is broken?
I guess so, Raoden said. The important thing is realizing there's a link between ourselves and the door, Galadin. Not only that, but there must be some sort of link between this land and the door.
Galadin frowned. Why do you say that?
Because Aeon Dor was developed in Aerilon and nowhere else, Raoden said. The text says that the farther one traveled from Elantris, the weaker the Aeon Dor powers became. Besides, only people from Aerilon are taken by the Sheod. It can take Teoish people, but only if they're living in Aerilon at the time.
Oh, and it takes the occasional doula as well.
I hadn't noticed.
There's some link between this land, the Aerilish people, and the door, Galadin, Raoden said. I've never heard of a Fjordel getting taken by the Sheod, no matter how long he lives in Aerilon. Doulas are a mixed people, half Jindo, half Aeonic. Where was your farm in Duladin?
Galadin frowned. In the north, Sule.
The part that borders Aerilon, Raoden said triumphantly. It has something to do with the land, and with our Aeonic bloodlines.
Galadin shrugged.
It sounds like it makes sense, Sule. But I'm just a simple farmer. What know I of such things?
Raoden snorted, not bothering to respond to the comment.
But why? What's the connection?
Maybe the Fjordel are right. Maybe Aerilon is cursed.
Hypothesize away, Sule, Galadin said, turning back to his work. I don't see much empirical good to it, though.
All right. Well, I'll stop theorizing as soon as you tell me where a simple farmer learned the word empirical.
Galadin didn't respond, but Raoden thought he could hear the doula, chuckling softly.
Chapter 20.
Let me see if I understand you, princess dear, Ahane said, holding aloft a chubby finger. You want us to help Aiden? How foolish I am. I thought we didn't like the fellow.
We don't, Serene agreed. Helping the king financially doesn't have anything to do with our personal feelings.
I am afraid I have to agree with Ahane, princess, Roile said with outspread hands. Why the sudden change? What good will it do to aid the king now?
Serene gritted her teeth in annoyance. Then, however, she caught a twinkle in the elderly duke's eye. He knew. The duke reportedly had a spy network as extensive as most kings. He had figured out what Raethyn was trying to do. He had asked the question not to provoke her, but to give her an opportunity to explain. Serene exhaled slowly, grateful for the duke's tact.
Someone is sinking the king's ships, Serene said. Common sense confirms what my father's spies say. Dreoke Crushthroat's fleets couldn't be sinking the boats. Most of Dreoke's ships were destroyed 15 years ago when he tried to take the throne of Teod, and any remnants have long since disappeared. Wyrn must be behind the sinkings.
All right, we accept that much, Ahane said.
Fjordan is also giving financial support to Duke Telrai, Serene continued.
You don't have any proof of that, Your Highness, Eundel pointed out.
No, I don't, Serene admitted, pacing between the men's chairs, the ground soft with new spring grass. They had eventually decided to hold this meeting in the gardens of K.E.'s Karathi Chapel, and so there was no table for her to circle. Serene had managed to remain seated during the first part of the meeting, but had eventually stood. She found it easier to address others when she was on her feet, something of a nervous habit, she realized, but she also knew that her height lent her an air of authority. I do, however, have logical conjecture, she said.
Eondel would respond well to anything following the word logical. We all attended Telrai's party a week ago. He must have spent more on that ball than most men make in a year. Extravagance isn't always a sign of wealth, Shuden pointed out. I've seen men poor as a peasant put on dazzling shows to maintain an illusion of security in the face of collapse. Shuden's words rang true. A man at their own meeting, Baron Edain, was doing just what Shuden described. Serene frowned. I've done some checking around. I had a lot of free time this last week, since none of you managed to get this meeting together, despite its urgency. None of the noblemen would meet her eyes after that comment. She'd finally gotten them together. But unfortunately, Kyine and Lucal hadn't been able to attend because of a prior engagement. Anyway, rumors say that Telrai's accounts have swelled drastically during the last 2 weeks, and his shipments to Fjordan turn fantastic profits no matter what he chooses to send, whether it be fine spices or cow dung. The fact remains that the Duke has not aligned himself with Shudarath, Eondel pointed out. He still attends his Karathi meetings piously. Serene folded her arms, tapping her cheek in thought. If Telrai openly aligned himself with Fjordan, his earnings would be suspicious. Raythan is far too crafty to be so transparent. It would be smarter for Fjordan to remain separate from the Duke, allowing Telrai to appear a pious conservative. Despite Raythan's recent advances, it would be much easier for a traditional Karathi to usurp the throne than it would be for a Durethi. He'll take the throne, then make good on his pact with Wyrn, Roael agreed. Which is why we have to make sure Iaedan starts earning money again very soon, Serene said. The nation is running dry. It is very possible that Telrai will earn more in his next accounting period than Iaedan, even including taxes. I doubt the king would abdicate. However, if Telrai were to stage a coup, the other nobles might go along with him.
How do you like that, Edain? Ahane asked, directing a hearty laugh at the anxious baron. You might not be the only one who loses his title in a few months. Old Iaedan himself might join you.
If you please, Count Ahane, Serene said. It's our duty to make sure that doesn't happen.
What do you want us to do? Edain asked nervously. Send gifts to the king? I don't have any money to spare.
None of us do, Edain, Ahane responded, hands resting on his ample belly. If it were spare, it wouldn't be valuable now, would it?
You know what he means, Ahane, Roael chided. And I doubt gifts are what the princess had in mind.
Actually, I'm open for suggestions, gentlemen, Serene said, spreading out her hands. I'm a politician, not a merchant. I'm a confessed amateur at making money. Gifts wouldn't work, Shuden said, hands laced before his chin contemplatively. The king is a proud man, who has earned his fortune through sweat, work, and scheming. He would never take handouts, even to save his throne. Besides, merchants are notoriously suspicious of gifts.
We could go to him with the truth, Serene suggested. Maybe then he'd accept our help.
He wouldn't believe us, Roael said, with a shake of his aged head. The king is a very literal man, Serene, even more so than our dear Lord Eondel. Generals have to think abstractly to outguess their opponents. But Iaedan, I seriously doubt he's had an abstract thought in his life. The king accepts things as they appear to be, especially if they are the way he thinks they should be.
which is why Lady Serene fooled His Majesty with her apparent lack of wits, Shuden agreed. He expected her to be foolish, and when she appeared to fit his expectations, he dismissed her, even if her act was terribly overdone. Serene chose not to rebut that remark.
"Pirates are something Iodine understands," Roile said. "They make sense in the world of shipping. In a way, every merchant considers himself a pirate. However, governments are different. In the king's eyes, it wouldn't make sense for a kingdom to sink ships filled with valuable merchandise. The king would never attack merchants, no matter how tense the war. And as far as he knows, Aerilan and Fjordan are good friends. He was the first one to let Durethai priests into Kaei, and he has given that Yorn Wraithen every liberty of a visiting nobleman. I seriously doubt we could convince him that Wyrn is trying to depose him.
We could try framing Fjordan, Eondel suggested, making it obvious that the sinkings are Wyrn's work.
It would take too long, Eondel, Ahane said, shaking his jowls. Besides, Iden doesn't have many ships left. I doubt he'll risk them in those same waters again.
Serene nodded. It would also be very difficult for us to establish a connection to Wyrn. He's probably using Svordish warships for the task. Fjordan itself doesn't have much of a navy.
Was Drio Crushthroat Svordish? Eondel asked with a frown.
I heard he was Fjordel, Ahain said.
No, Roile said. I think he was supposed to be Aeonic, wasn't he?
Anyway, Serene said impatiently, trying to keep the meeting on track as she paced across the loamy garden floor. Lord Ahain said he wouldn't risk his ships in those waters again, but the king obviously has to keep them shipping somewhere. Ahain nodded in agreement.
He can't afford to stop now. Spring is one of the best buying seasons. People have been cooped up all winter with drab colors and drabber relatives. As soon as the snow melts, they're ready to splurge a little. This is the time when expensive colored silks go for a premium, and that is one of Iodine's best products. These sinkings are a disaster. Not only did Iodine lose the ships themselves, he lost the profit he would have made off all those silks, not to mention the other cargo. Many merchants nearly bankrupt themselves this time of year by stockpiling goods that they know they can eventually sell.
His Majesty got greedy, Shuden said. He bought more and more ships and filled them with as much silk as he could afford.
We're all greedy, Shuden, Ahain said. Don't forget, your family earned its fortune by organizing the spice route from Jindo. You didn't even ship anything. You just built the roads and charged the merchants to use them.
Let me rephrase, Lord Ahain, Shuden said. The king let his greed make him foolish. Disasters are something every good merchant should plan for. Never ship what you can't afford to lose.
Well put, Ahain agreed.
Anyway, Serene said, if the king only has a couple of ships left, then they have to deliver a solid profit.
Solid isn't the right word, my dear, Ahain said. Try extraordinary. It is going to take a miracle for Iodine to recoup from this little catastrophe, especially before Tel-Rai humiliates him irreparably.
What if he had an agreement with Teod? Serene asked. An extremely lucrative contract for silks.
Maybe, Ahain said with a shrug. It's clever.
But impossible, Duke Roile said.
Why? Serene demanded. Teod can afford it.
Because, the Duke explained, Iden would never accept such a contract.
He's too experienced a merchant to make a deal that appears too fabulous to be realistic.
Agreed, Shudin said with a nod. The king wouldn't be against making a horrible profit off of Teod, but only if he thought he was cheating you.
The others nodded at Shudin's statement. Although the Jindui's man was the youngest in the group, Shudin was quickly proving himself to be as shrewd as Roile, perhaps more so. That capability, mixed with his deserved reputation for honesty, earned him respect beyond his years. It was a powerful man indeed, who could mix integrity with savvy.
"We'll have to think on this some more," Roile said, "but not too long. We must solve the problem by the accounting day. Otherwise we'll be dealing with Telrai instead of Iodine. As bad as my old friend is, I know we'd have less luck with Telrai. Especially if Fjordan is backing him."
"Is everyone doing as I asked with their planting?" Sirin asked, as the nobles prepared to leave.
"It wasn't easy," Ahane admitted. "My overseers and minor nobles all objected to the idea."
"But you did it."
"I did," Ahane said. "As did I," Roile said. "I had no choice," Edain muttered.
Shudan and Eondel each gave her quiet nods.
"We started planting last week," Edain said. "How long before we see results?"
"Hopefully within the next 3 months, for your sake, my lord," Serene said. "That is usually long enough to get an estimate of how good a crop will do," Shudan said.
"I still don't see how it matters whether the people think they're free or not," Ahane said. "The same seeds get planted, and so the same crop should come up."
"You'll be surprised, my lord," Serene promised.
"May we go now?" Edain asked pointedly.
He still chafed at the idea of Serene running these meetings. "One more question, my lords. I've been considering my widow's trial, and would like to hear what you think." The men began to shift uncomfortably at the statement, looking at each other uneasily. "Oh, come now," Serene said with a displeased frown. "You're grown men. Get over your childish fear of Elantris." "It is a very delicate topic in Erelan, Serene," Shudan said. "Well, it appears that Raythan isn't worried about that," she said. "You all know what he's begun to do."
"He's drawing a parallel between Shu-Korath and Elantris," Roile said with a nod. "He's trying to turn the people against the Karathi priests."
"And he's going to be successful if we don't stop him," Serene said. "Which requires you all to get over your squeamishness and stop pretending that Elantris doesn't exist. The city is a major part of the Yorn's plans." The men shot each other knowing looks in the dense Karathi garden. The men thought she paid undue attention to the Yorn. They saw Iodin's government as a major problem, but religion didn't seem a tangible threat. They didn't understand that in Fjordan, at least, religion and war were almost the same thing. "You're just going to have to trust me, my lords," Serene said. "Raythan's schemes are important. You said the king sees things concretely. Well, this Raythan is the opposite. He views everything by its potential, and his goal is to make Erelan another Fjordel protectorate. If he is using Elantris against us, we must respond."
"Just have that short Karathi priest agree with him," Ahane suggested. "Put them on the same side. Then no one can use the city against anyone else."
"Omine won't do that, my lord," Serene said with a shake of her head. "He bears the Elantrians no ill will, and he would never consent to labeling them devils."
"Couldn't he just," Ahane said. "Merciful Domai, Ahane,"
Roile said. Don't you ever attend his sermons? The man would never do that.
I go, Ahane said indignantly. I just thought he might be willing to serve his kingdom. We could compensate him.
No, my lord, Serene said insistently. Omine is a man of the church, a good and sincere one at that. To him, truth is not subject to debate or sale. I'm afraid we have no choice. We have to side with Elantris. Several faces, including Eundel and Edain's, blanched at that statement.
That might not be an easy proposition to carry out, Serene, Roile warned. You may think us childish, but these four are among the most intelligent and open-minded men in Aerilon. If you find them nervous about Elantris, then you will find the rest of Aerilon more so.
We have to change that sentiment, my lord, Serene said. And my widow's trial is our opportunity. I am going to take food to the Elantrians. This time she succeeded in getting a reaction, even from Shuden and Roile.
Did I hear you correctly, my dear?
Ahane asked with a shaky voice.
You're going to go into Elantris?
Yes, Serene said.
I need something to drink, Ahane decided, unstoppering his wine flask.
The king will never allow it, Edain said. He doesn't even let the Elantra city guards go inside.
He's right, Shuden agreed. You will never get through those gates, your highness. Let me deal with the king, Serene said.
Your subterfuge won't work this time, Serene, Roile warned. No amount of stupidity will convince the king to let you into the city.
I'll think of something, Serene said, trying to sound more certain than she was. It's not your concern, my lord. I just want your word that you will help me.
Help you?
Ahane asked hesitantly. Help me distribute food in Elantris, Serene said. Ahane's eyes bugged out.
Help you, he repeated. In there?
My goal is to demystify the city, Serene explained. To do that, I'll need to convince the nobility to go inside and see for themselves that there's nothing horrifying about the Elantrians.
I'm sorry to sound objectionable, Eundel began. But Lady Serene, what if there is? What if everything they say about Elantris is true?
Serene paused. I don't think they're dangerous, Lord Eundel. I've looked in on the city and its people. There is nothing frightening about Elantris. Well, nothing besides the way its people are treated. I don't believe the tales about monsters or Elantrian cannibalism. I just see a collection of men and women who have been mistreated and misjudged. Eundel didn't look convinced, and neither did the others. Look, I'll go in first and test it, Serene said. I want you lords to join me after the first few days.
Why us?
Edain said with a groan. Because I need to start somewhere, Serene explained. If you lords brave the city, then others will feel foolish if they object. Aristocrats have a group mentality. If I can build some momentum, then I can probably get most of them to come in with me at least once. Then they'll see that there is nothing horrible about Elantris. That its people are just poor wretches who want to eat. We can defeat Raythan with simple truth. It is hard to demonize a man after you've seen tears in his eyes as he thanks you for feeding him.
This is all pointless anyway,
Edain said, his hand twitching at the thought of entering Elantris. The king will never let her in.
And if he does?
Serene asked quickly. Then will you go, Edain? The Baron blinked in surprise, realizing he had been caught. She waited for him to respond, but he stubbornly refused to answer the question.
I will, Shuden declared.
Serene smiled at the Jindo. This was the second time he had been the first to offer her support.
If Shuden's going to do it, then I doubt the rest of us will have the humility to say no,
Roil said.
Get your permission, Serene. Then we will discuss this further.
Maybe I was a little too optimistic, Serene admitted, standing outside the doors to Iodin's study. A pair of guards stood a short distance away, watching her suspiciously.
Do you know what you are going to do, my lady?
Aishi asked. The Sion had spent the meeting floating just outside the chapel walls, well within his range of hearing, making certain that no one else was eavesdropping on their meeting. Serene shook her head. She had displayed bravado when confronted by Ahain and the others, but now she realized how misplaced that sentiment had been. She had no idea how she was going to get Iodin to let her into Elantris, let alone get him to accept their help.
"Did you speak with Father?" she asked.
"I did, my lady," Aishi replied. "He said he would give you whatever financial help you required."
"All right," Serene said. "Let's go."
She took a deep breath and strode toward the soldiers.
"I would speak with my father," she announced.
The guards glanced at each other.
We were told not to.
That doesn't apply to family, soldier, Serene said insistently. If the queen came to speak with her husband, would you turn her away? The guards frowned in confusion. Ishin probably didn't come to visit. Serene had noticed that the bubbly queen tended to keep her distance from Iodin. Even silly women resent being described that way to their faces.
Just open the door, soldier, Serene said. If the king doesn't want to talk to me, he'll throw me out. And next time you will know not to let me in.
The guards hesitated, and Serene simply pushed her way between them and opened the door herself. The guards, obviously unused to dealing with forceful women, especially in the royal family, simply let her pass. Iodin looked up from his desk. A pair of spectacles she had never seen him wear before, balanced on the end of his nose. He quickly pulled them off and stood, slamming his hands against the desktop in annoyance, disturbing several invoice stacks in the process.
"You aren't content to annoy me in public, so you have to follow me to my study as well?" he demanded. "If I'd known what a foolish, spindly girl you were, I would never have signed that treaty. Be gone, woman, and leave me to work."
"I tell you what, Father," Serene said with frankness. "I'll pretend to be an intelligent human being, capable of a semi-lucid conversation. And you pretend the same thing."
Iodin's eyes grew wide at the comment, and his face turned a bright red.
"Ragdomai!" he swore.
Using a curse so vile, Serene had only heard it twice.
"You tricked me, woman! I could have you beheaded for making me look the fool!"
"Start decapitating your children, Father, and people will begin to ask questions." She watched his reaction carefully, hoping to glean something about Raoden's disappearance. But she was disappointed. Iodin brushed off the comment with only passing attention.
"I should ship you back to Eventio right now," he said.
"Fine, I'd be happy to go," she lied. "However, realize that if I go, you lose your trade treaty with Teode. That could be a problem, considering the luck you've had peddling your silks in Fjorden lately. Iodine gritted his teeth at the